Well, we're going to have to tune down Steve Grinnell and the Haunted House Blues so we can let you know that we do have a lot of blues shows to share with you here at the station Making Waves. And it's Tuesday, Mike Holloway and the Go With The Flow show from 4 to 6. Kitty Love and the Circle Within from midnight till 2 a.m. And on Thursday, Mr. White and Blues Time from noon to 2. And Thursday, midnight till 2 is Jumper and Southern Blues After Midnight. I'm Joanne Korchenska. I'll be back next Friday with the long cruise down Highway 61, which will go till 6 p.m. And then we have Saturday, Anderson Coleman, 3 to 6 with Blues with a Feeling. And we finish off with Todd in the Sunday Blues Review from 4 to 6. And I'm leaving with this song I've been playing now for about 5 years, Bobby Blue Bland's version of What a Wonderful World. I'd like to remind you that it can be a wonderful world. It is how you look at it and what you put into it. Until next Friday, I leave you with a message of peace and love.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now for our special election edition of the new WHFR Journal. Special show coming right up for the next hour here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Yes, for those of you that listen to our show regularly on Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m., this is the second hour of our election special. We're just too much to talk about, too many special guests, too many ideas for you to consider before you cast that all-important vote next Tuesday. So much going on here in Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM, and I'm joined for the special edition second hour by our news director, Susan Garrett. Susan Morrell. I don't even know who's sitting here with me.
Yes, okay. I'm still here.
Okay. And we just had an exciting hour and a half that just ended a few minutes ago at University of Michigan Dearborn. What happened, Susan?
Well, we had a very, very exciting time. Ralph Nader appeared at University of Michigan Dearborn in person, and he spoke for over 30 minutes, and he talked about his political platform. And, you know, he's a genius. He's a fascinating candidate. He knows the issues back and forth. He talked about the big three car companies here in Michigan and them asking for bailouts and what he thinks about that. And he talked about the economy, the Michigan economy, and why we should vote for Ralph Nader.
And, of course, but we recorded it, folks. We have a recording of sorts, and we're going to play that entire 30 minutes as part of this hour. Now, again, if you say, well, I'm for Barack Obama, I'm for John McCain, have you heard Ralph Nader talk for 30 minutes. We're not going to try to convince you to vote for him, but if you haven't well listened to Nader and all the other candidates that are equally on the ballot as presidential candidates, then you can't say you made a good choice if you don't know what the other choices were. So we're going to be featuring that in just a few seconds, and then after that we'll be coming back with, first of all, a review of the endorsements for local candidates from the two local Dearborn papers, at least, and we'll talk a little bit about Dearborn Heights. And if I can get it queued up, we'll also include at the end of the show the last 5 or 10 minutes of Ralph Nader where he's responding to questions from the audience.
Yes,
too.
Get my questions in.
Okay, yeah. Susan asked a
Thank
question.
Thank you. I had two really good questions.
Well, she thinks, and Ralph got very animated and so on. And so we'll be featuring that starting, right now. So this is Ralph Nader at University of Michigan Dearborn today, October 30th, speaking.
31st. Hi, 31st. Happy Halloween.
Yes, and if you do have a, if you do want a crazy Halloween grab bag from WHFR, everybody that calls to our station today until I think 2 or 3 a.m., however late we broadcast live from the studio, you can get sent to you just one Halloween grab bag. And it's used CDs, which might be very scary indeed, in the sense that you may not like the music or not the format, but you might find a real gem, who knows. Just have to call us 313-845-9676, and if we're not talking on the air like we are now, we will answer the phone and write down your name and address. Option one, live studio, 313-845-9676, but here's the presentation by Ralph Nader now from 3 o'clock this afternoon at U of M Dearborn.
Good work here at the university, ladies and gentlemen. I want to make a few remarks first of all. This is a tough time in Michigan, and it's a tough time because the executives of the major auto companies have failed miserably, except their own pay package. They failed their workers, they failed their shareholders, they failed their communities. Because they took the easy way out, which is not to put their engineers and scientists to work to produce competitive motor vehicles, especially fuel-efficient motor vehicles with their Japanese and South Korean and European competitors. But they defiantly did that. They lobbied Washington for 30 years against our efforts, demanding no further increase in fuel efficiency standards from the one that was set in 1975 for a 27.5 mile per vehicle average fuel efficiency for the automotive fleets. And then under Reagan, GM and Ford started getting exemptions even from that standard. Unfortunately, United Auto Workers sided with them. It's the one thing I've never understood about the UAW. Why they side with the auto companies and make it impossible to get through Congress better fuel efficiency vehicles with as many United Auto Worker jobs. And so it's almost like they traded off for dwindling union membership with job security in return for making it impossible for environmental consumer groups to prevail in Congress. Because when you're confronted with the auto industry lobbyists and the UAW, you can't win in Congress. So here we are. With GM, Ford, and Chrysler having received $25 billion in low-interest loan subsidies from the U.S. government, this went through Congress a few weeks ago without a single hour of public hearing. That's the way they do things now. I think they've learned from King George III. It's called taxation without representation. When the Chrysler bailout was underway in 1979 for modest $1.25 billion loan guarantee, they had days of public hearings. I participated in the Senate, in the House, before it went through. It went through with strict requirements, including that Lee Iacocca and Chrysler had to issue stock warrants to the U.S. Treasury so that if Chrysler recovered, which it did, the stock warrants would more than pay for the loan guarantee, and they were sold for $400 million in profit. This time there were no stock warrants. It was very vague, supposedly pay for retrofitting factories to produce more fuel-efficient cars, but there's no requirement for that. As if that's not enough, Rick Wagoner, the CEO of General Motors, has been in Washington in the last few days trying to get $10 billion more out of you, the taxpayer, to finance the merger of Chrysler and GM, which will unemploy, directly and indirectly, 90,000 workers. So look how grotesque it is. First, they support the efforts to block fuel efficiency standards and lead them in Congress. Then they get in trouble. Then they go to get to Washington for bailout number one, the loan guarantees. And then now they want us to finance their own mergers and unemploy 90,000 workers with $10 billion of taxpayer money. Who can think this up? It's hard even to make this. Now you say, well, what is the problem with Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler? The problem is that they have had leadership that is not in the tradition of automotive engineering. They're finance people, they're accountants, they're so-called business managers. They're not engineers. And they're way behind, obviously, the Honda and Toyota hybrid motor vehicles. And they're selling gas-guzzling monsters that people can't afford and don't want to buy anymore. So they're in deep trouble, along with the communities here in Michigan, and it's going to get worse. Michigan has the highest unemployment rate in the United States. You have one of the highest uninsured population for health care, 13.4% uninsured, at least that much underinsured, and before we know it, you're going to be in a depression. The auto companies have been shipping jobs out of Michigan for years to Mexico. Now they're moving to other countries. They're outsourcing a lot of the parts. They have no gratitude. That's the nature of global corporations. They rise to profit on the backs of American workers. They get bailed out on the backs of American taxpayers when they get in trouble in Washington. And when they get in trouble overseas, you know what the government does to back them up. And what's their response to America? We're out of here with your jobs and industries. Where? To fascist and communist dictatorships who know how to keep their workers in their place. Now, how long are we going to be ruled by these plutocrats and autocrats, these corporate supremacists? As long as we let them. Last I heard, they don't have a single vote. We're the ones who have the votes. There are 535 men and women in Congress, senators and representatives, who put their shoes on like you and I do every day. Majority of them are swung into the direction of corporate demands by 1,500 or so corporations who get their way with the majority. They don't have any votes. They have power and money. But what is it that members of Congress want more than power and money? Wants our votes. Why do we give it to them? Why don't we condition the vote? Why do we have a voting population half of whom stay home, don't vote, because they don't think it matters, and the rest go and vote for the least worst of the two parties? Michigan is turning into a colony. Your courtroom doors are closing if you're wrongfully injured or defrauded. It has worse laws for consumers in Mississippi, which is saying something, given this was the home of progressive Democrats and United Auto Workers years ago. I know trial lawyers who aren't even practicing anymore. If they want to sue the auto companies, they have to do it in Illinois or some other state, because under John Engler and others, the legislature closed the doors on adequate rewards for people who are injured by defective motor vehicles, hazardous drugs, toxic chemicals, you name it. why should anybody think things are going to get better here in Michigan? Your universities are starting to suffer, especially the public ones. The state looks in bad disrepair, just right around the state. You probably have the worst cabs in United States history, and Detroit. I would get in a Detroit cab a few years ago, I'd look down and I'd see the road. This is the auto capital of the world. You go to a place like Tokyo and they got well-kept cabs, they're clean, drivers wear white gloves. Shabby. This is what happens when you live in a one-crop state. Any state that's dominated by one industry, whether it's the cotton plantations in the South, or auto companies here, or the copper barons in Montana, you're going to have an imbalanced economy, not a very good one, and a boom and bust economy. So what do we do? Well, if the taxpayer is going to be asked to bail out the auto companies, here's what should happen. Number one, removal of the board of directors and the executives. They're the ones who caused the problem. There's no point giving them money to cause more problems.
What director?
The board of directors of General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. The board of directors of General Motors keeps giving Rick Wagoner a vote of confidence. And he has now run this company into the ground. He's very congenial, and he sweet-talks the board. But the stock valuation of General Motors is now $3 billion. You know what Toyota is? $160 million. The stock valuation of GM is so low that I'm going to urge T. Boone Pickens, Warren Buffett, and George Soros to buy it and put it back into shape. Because if GM can become competitive again with fuel-efficient motor vehicles, safe motor vehicles that are easy to operate, and once the sales turn around, you can have an ecological General Motors. It's not going to happen with the present manager. It's a testimony to the fact that the shareholders have no control over the company they own. That these high executives have been running this industry into the ground year after year. And even when they were selling a lot of gas-guzzling SUVs, they knew tax injection has to be conditioned on changes that may increase the likelihood of these companies to start to prosper. That means technological improvements in their products. It's all about product in the final analysis. People are not buying U.S. auto company cars because they're not as good. They go to the repair shop too often. They don't have the fit and finish. They don't have the kind of service, they don't have the fuel efficiency, and that's becoming quite clear. Toyota now has passed General Motors easily worldwide in sales, and it's beginning to catch up here in this country. Now, GM and Chrysler want taxpayers to fund their merger. Why is that merger going to solve anything? Sure, they'll have one sales executive instead of two, and so on. But why is that going to sell more cars? And how many places like Toledo are going to lose their plants? Certainly not good for the workers. It's just a stopgap, band-aid measure to distract attention of the country from the bad management and the lousy products that they're producing. I want to make some comments on foreign policy in the Middle East. With the complicity of the Democrats, George W. Bush has been engaging in an aggressive criminal war occupation in Iraq, which is unconstitutional, violation of federal statute.
Well, what's happening is there, folks, is and unbeknownst to us when we were recording this, is somebody's cell phone. There are cell phones on the market these days that are constantly being updated by, you're not even aware of it. You don't even have your phone on. You're not even getting a call. But the phone is being updated, like for time and date and so on. And we must have been sitting too close to somebody's cell phone that was not ringing, but it's off, and we got some interference there. We're going to try to re-cue the Q&A at the end and feature that on the show. But I think you get the idea here. Ralph's comments basically is that the auto industry is the situation's going to get worse before it gets better. And of course, we'll hear a little more in the follow-up questions that come at the end if we don't have the cell phone interference. That doesn't happen all the time, folks, but it is a problem where large groups get together these days. There's interference everywhere in this world. You're listening to the second edition, the second hour of the special edition of WHFR Journal. And of course, we're going to cover other issues right now that are happening in Dearborn and the surrounding area.
But Jay, I liked what Ralph Nader said about the merger between GM and Chrysler. He said there's really no benefit to anybody for that, and the people who are going to lose are the workers. It's going to be 90,000 workers lose their jobs because of that, and they're asking for a government bailout for bad management of the fellow who's running GM.
Yeah, Rick Wagner.
So he's totally against it, and he's really feeling sorry for us here in Michigan, considering our economy and the state of it and the lack of jobs. And he's just going to get worse because we're in one industry state.
Yeah. You asked some a good follow-up question for a few more specifics about it. And if we have an uninterfered with Q&A on this tape that I'll queue up as you present a couple stories here, then we'll go back to that. Otherwise, you can talk about some details he gave. The bad news he feels is that, allowing GM and Chrysler to merge is not going to help because all those workers will lose their jobs. So you're not going to help Michigan at all, and you're only temporarily going to help GM stay afloat. That what they need is a whole different direction, and we'll talk more about that if we can get the Q&A queued up, and if there's not the interference that all of a sudden started to happen there. So in Dearborn, I would just like to do two stories, and that is just to repeat as I did from 1 to 2, because I know some of our listeners, they say, what the heck is this? It's not the blues. No, it's a one-day-only special, election special, which is available on a podcast, too, from our website, www.fm, as soon as we're done talking today. And the first thing I'd like to do is just summarize again for those that don't get the local papers, and shame on you if you don't get the weekly paper in your area. The Press and Guide, their recommendations in local races is it looks like they're favoring incumbent Judge Mark Summers over Candace Abbott. It's not clear, however. They did talk more positively about Judge Summers than Candace Abbott. The Times-Herald newspaper on that same race didn't take sides. So I guess we shouldn't have a 19th district judge because they don't know who. Well, if the newspaper doesn't know who's better, and with all their reporters and sources and behind-the-scenes information, I think we're really in trouble. But maybe they wanted to be politic. Maybe Candace Abbott is a personal friend or something. I don't know. As I mentioned in the first hour, Abbott has sent three more pieces, at least to my house, and I don't think it was a mistake, different pieces of campaign material that are all negative. And as they say here in the Press and Guide, they're not so sure about Candace Abbott because all of her advertising is just tearing down the other candidate. And there's not that much about her. Of course, she's not an incumbent. She doesn't have a track record in that position. And she's never been a judge before, for that matter. But, okay, in terms of the school board election, Sharon Domage is endorsed by both Press and Guide and Times Herald, and she's an incumbent. Amy Blackburn gets the support from the Press and Guide, whereas Mary Lane gets the support from the Dearborn Times Herald. She would be returning to the board, and because of election irregularity, and she thinks its fault was the fault of the city clerk, and the city clerk pretty much made an argument that might have been her fault. But in any event, it's interesting that she gets the support. Both Mary Lane and Amy Blackburn, who got the second position support from the Press and Guide, were both candidates years ago when they first got on the board, and they were considered part of the reform issue. In other words, let's change the board, let's make it more responsive to the community, let's get things done, not the same old sort of thing. And now they're the same old sort of thing. I'm sorry, I haven't seen either Amy Blackburn or Mary Lane do anything in a significantly new direction, but nothing wrong either. And Sharon Domage has been there for a long, long time and has always been seen as a very helpful supporter of the board. Other than that, the Times Herald goes with all the incumbents. So you like the way things have been going so far, folks? Apparently the Times Herald does. Press and Guide, pretty much the same thing. Even Andy Dillon gets the support of the Times Herald and the Press and Guide. Again, he's an incumbent, and the recall effort is going to be on the ballot. But if it succeeds, remember, you're only going to recall him for 2 months if he does get reelected. And I thought it was useful, and you should look at this, the Times Herald for last Sunday, October 26th, and they are now just becoming a weekly, at least for the next several months. They talk about Andy Dillon and his Republican challenger. Now, of course, he has other challengers than just Republican, and guess what? None of the so-called third parties, I don't know if it's Green Party or Libertarian or both, that are there on the ballot in that race, but not talked about in the paper at all. But Sandra Eggers is the Republican, and they give a very nice background on her. Never heard of her before. Didn't know her background until I read this, and we don't have time to share that. In the 15th District, of course, everyone's supporting Gino Polidori, the incumbent. But his challenger, J. Scott Saions, and I think that's how you'd pronounce it, S-A-I-O-N-S, Republican. As I mentioned in the first hour, he actually has some libertarian streaks, apparently, and the Libertarian Party knows that he's in favor of the fare tax that we've talked about here on the show, and some other positions that are kind of interesting. And so if you want to see what the Republican is all about, who also is somewhat of a libertarian, then you might also want to read the Sunday front page of the Dearborn Heights Times Herald to find out about Scott J., not the name J., but the initial J., I think he's just referred to as Scott Saions, S-A-I-O-N-Z. But and I don't think there's any third-party candidates in that package. So you have some press releases in front of you, Susan? Yes? No? No? Okay. Here are some.
Any moment. Okay. Press releases. Here they come. Okay. Just to let everybody know that Mayor O'Reilly, the mayor of Dearborn, is hosting a special live election night program on CDTV. Starts at 9:30 p.m., apparently that will be tonight, and the public is invited to attend in the council chambers. He's going to hold that on Access Cable Television, and the public is invited to attend the live program, which will be aired from the City Council chambers at Dearborn City Hall. CDTV is the City of Dearborn's government cable television channel. CDTV is Channel 12. On Comcast, and Channel 10 on WOW. Mayor O'Reilly's program will begin at 9:30 p.m. and continues until Dearborn's election results are all in. The show will offer a live coverage of results as they are announced, as well as interviews with candidates and special guests like the Dearborn Press and Guide editor, Tim Powers, and a representative from the Dearborn Times Herald. And if you need additional information, call 313-943-2285. And let's see what else we have. We have a press release about U.S. Senator Carl Levin from Michigan. And he is giving support to research And he says, in Michigan, our laws are preventing stem cell research from blocking some of America's best scientists and research universities from pursuing the great hope for curing debilitating and life-threatening diseases. Michigan is only one of five states that restricts this type of research. This coming Tuesday, we have the opportunity to remove these outdated restrictions on embryonic stem cell research in Michigan by voting yes on Proposal 2. This is all Levin's statement, and he is supporting the proposal because he believes in allowing a life-giving purpose for embryos that are no longer needed by the couples who produce them, embryos which would be discarded and destroyed, even though a couple would like their unneeded embryos to be used for critical life-giving research. This proposal only deals with those embryos that will be discarded. We should help our scientists, not hinder them. Please take a moment to learn how you can help support Proposal 2. And this is on his website, Friends of Senator Carl Levin. And it's carllevin.com. So you might want to go to his website, and he gives a lot more information. And the opponents of embryonic stem cell research say that adult stem cell research has made significant advances and is sufficient. Adult stem cells, which are limited in the kinds of cells they can become, have created some medical advances. However, embryonic stem cells are unique because they can grow into any form of tissue or organ. Adult stem cells cannot. Because of this unique trait, almost all scientists agree that embryonic stem cells offer vastly more potential than adult stem cells. Thousands of embryos from fertilization clinics are not going to be used for implantation, and they will be destroyed. Why not give them a life-giving use? So this is the reason why we should support Proposal 2 on the ballot coming up next week on November 4th. Make sure you get out and vote. And so the opponents of Proposal 2 have refused to debate this issue on substance and have resorted to false statements about the effects of Proposal 2. Let's be clear. This proposal does not allow human cloning. Such cloning is prohibited specifically by the language of the proposal. The proposal does not call for public funds to be directed to this kind of research and does not call for an increase in any taxes. And the proposal limits will be used to only use those stem cells currently being discarded as medical waste and only if allowed by federal law. So visit curemichigan.com today and learn how you can become involved. So that's Levin's position.
Yes, and when we were listening, I think I have the Q&A for just about 8 or 10 minutes queued up, Ralph, but what happened there, what I'm listening to, and I'm warning our listeners, is that they turned on wireless microphones for the audience.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, and we're getting some interference from the signal, the wireless mic that they distributed through the audience. But we're going to try that and let you hear that. But in terms of what I thought was significant about the Levin press release, and he sent it out to an email form too, is that here is a mainstream political candidate, okay, a Democrat, but actually making a statement about a controversial issue in this state. And although he is thought to have a tremendous lead over his Republican challenger in terms of getting reelected to his Senate seat this year, I thought it was, you know, in terms of conventional wisdom, brave of him to say that he was in favor of a yes vote on stem cell research, even though the Times Herald came down in favor of that. They were endorsing it too, as well as medical marijuana issue. And you remember how Ralph Nader responded to those proposals?
Yes, he was in favor of both.
Right. Medical marijuana. Well, actually, he went a little further on medical marijuana. Maybe we'll hear it if the it's in the Q&A here. So let's try the Q&A now with Ralph Nader from this afternoon at University of Michigan Dearborn. And we'll see if the quality holds up or if the wireless mics, you know, take over. Here we go with Ralph Nader.
Are they going to improve their products so people will buy it and get cover and make profit? So it's far too early to discuss this unless there are thorough congressional hearings, we get all the cards on the table, we get the best proposals, not just from the auto companies and Washington, but from other people who have studied the industry carefully, like David Cole here in Michigan.
If I can just follow up on that, there are many people, as I'm sure you can imagine, in this area who are very worried about this, and the speculation is that if this deal doesn't happen, that the job losses could be even steeper. What sort of help, if any, are you suggesting should be here for those left behind?
There are too many unknowns. There are auto loans that are collapsing. The auto dealers are in trouble. You cannot just jump into this, because if you do it the wrong way, it's going to be worse. And is there going to be another bailout and another bailout?
Well, what about for the workers?
Well, the workers, when the minute you have the merger, you unemployed 90,000 workers. That's not a very good start. In the past, when the industry has declined, you know, boom and bust, they lay them off temporarily, or they're shut down a shift temporarily. But once you merge, you're going to get rid of some automotive lines, you're going to close plants in communities in Michigan, Illinois, Ohio. Why should you stampede this?
I guess my question is, whether there is a merger or there is not, we're going to see job losses additional to what we've already seen that are in hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands more. Is there anything that you think ought to be done at the federal level to help workers?
A public works program. That's the key. That's what's needed. That's what the government is the best at. Franklin Delano Roosevelt did it. Listen, there are a lot of workers who are going to lose their jobs because this Wall Street speculation collapsed, and they're not just in the auto industry. So we've got to be very careful about all kinds of other workers who are not being given a bailout. But my point is, we've got to do this sensibly, deliberately, full public hearings, and not be stampeded into perhaps a terrible mistake where we simply bail out bad management, which doesn't quit states. Yes.
Yes, you were talking about the product that the big three are putting out, and according to T. Boone Pickens, the good products are already being made by the big three, and they are distributed in other countries, vehicles that can run on natural gas. Why is this happening?
Well, the auto companies don't want to set up their facilities, A. They think people want their trunk space, B. And they're used to gasoline. I mean, this is a very stodgy industry. The last time it changed on a dime was World War II when they switched from cars to tanks. And they had no choice. The government would take it over if they didn't do it. Why should anybody buy a General Motors car that goes 20 or 23 miles on a gallon when they can buy a Japanese car that goes 10 miles per gallon more? They do have cars in Western Europe, as you pointed out, that have much better fuel efficiency. They just think the U.S. consumer doesn't really care. They want horsepower, they want space, and SUVs, and Suburbans, and so forth. And that's the way they've stereotyped the American car buyer, and they're getting a serious jolt in the other direction in the last few months.
And also regarding the bailout, the American taxpayers have been told for years and years that we didn't have enough money to fund Social Security into the future. But now we all of a sudden have enough money for a $700 billion bailout.
It's a sign of an oligarchy, isn't it? A sign of a plutocracy. They got plenty of your tax dollars for them after they messed up terribly. And they have no shame that they are demanding that socialism save capitalism, which is what's happening now. And the more we do that, the more they think that no matter what they do, how they screw up, and how they enrich themselves, how they tank their own companies and unemployed workers, that Washington will always bail them out. And, you know, there are some libertarian types and conservatives who say, let them fall. Toyota, Honda, they're building plants here. VW's building plants here. They'll just take the sales. What difference does it make? It's still got American workers.
Thank you.
Yes.
What do you think is the most important thing that needs to happen to the Michigan economy?
Most important thing that needs to happen is a decentralized economy where you have public works, you have the nascent solar energy industry coming in, you have value-added technology that already is starting, and you have more community self-reliance. The curse of the Michigan economy has been too much reliance on one industry. And we've got to redesign what economic development means as if workers and families come first, not global corporations with their pull-down trade agreements called NAFTA and the World Trade Organization.
Other press questions? Audience questions?
Yes.
First of all, it's a pleasure to meet you, and please continue the good work. I got a question on corporate side. I've got a question about, I'm attending a stockholder meeting next week. I do ISO 9000, and if you think this problem is bad in the auto industry, see what's going on in the medical device industry and how this stuff is being outsourced to China. We're going to have an unbelievable lawsuits coming on with all this stuff. But how do you get rid of the corporate boards? Because I'm attending a stockholder meeting next week.
You can't. They have Kremlin-type elections where there's only one slate, the board of directors slate put together by the officers. That's what we're trying to change. The Securities Exchange Commission does not stand for shareholder power. My way of thinking, if shareholders, mutual funds, worker pension funds, small investors, if they own the company, they should control it. They control executive compensation. They should have the authority to say no to mergers or yes to mergers, and that's not happening. So you have no accountability to the owners, and you have no accountability to the government because of deregulation. So where is the accountability going to come from? We have to have a shareholder rights movement that can offer competitive board of director slates to replace the existing ones.
How do we get it started, though? Because I'll open my mouth next week when I go to the stockholder.
Well, I keep saying to the worker pension funds, they've got trillions of dollars. They're the ones to get it underway. Pension funds actually own about a third of the New York Stock Exchange company shares.
Okay.
And they're workers, right? But they don't control what they own.
Thank you.
Let's take one more question. We only have 1 minute.
Robert Monks, by the way, look up Robert Monks. He's in Maine. He is the great shareholder rights leader, Harvard Law School graduate, and he's written many books on it, M-O-N-K-S. Yeah.
What are your views on legalization of medical marijuana?
Well, I'm for that, but I'm worried more than that. I think we should decriminalize possession of marijuana, which is on the ballot in Massachusetts now. The idea of arresting 800,000 young people for possession of small amounts of marijuana, ruining their records, many of them going to jail at $40,000 a year cap to the taxpayer, is insane. We don't send nicotine addicts to jail. We don't send alcoholics to jail. Why do we send people with drug addiction problems to jail? Because no major party politician wants to take this issue on. That's why you need independent third party candidates. That's why you need them. By the way, even Nixon proposed a bill, which Congress rejected, in the 1970s, favoring rehabilitation of drug addicts, not incarceration. Nixon keeps looking better. He actually had a better health plan than he had a program to abolish poverty called the Minimum Income Plan. Didn't get through, but he tried. And he signed all our bills into law, EPA, OSHA, you know, product safety, You know, I never thought that Tricky Dick would induce feelings of nostalgia. We have to go to the airport.
That was the end of the about 10 or 15 minutes of Q&A from the audience and from the press that was there. Just to give credit to Sarah Hewlett from Michigan Public Radio, and her reports are, of course, heard filed across the state at National Public Radio stations. So you might be listening tomorrow morning or even later this evening and hear that report. If they did it at all, I mean, what will they say about Ralph's statements there? Because he's... Well, he said some pretty extraordinary things. Susan, you want to make some comments?
Yes.
Before me?
He gave a wonderful presentation. We had some technical difficulties, but to be there in person was a great experience. He's an awesome figure, and he's a mental giant. But just to go over some of the points of their campaign. The Nader Gonzalez campaign wants a comprehensive six-month negotiated military and corporate withdrawal from Iraq, a single-payer free choice public health insurance system for everyone, a living wage and repeal of the anti-union Taft-Hartley Act, a no-nuke solar-based energy policy supported by renewable, sustainable, energy-efficient sources, a carbon tax to deter global warming, and a Wall Street securities derivatives tax to pay for the Washington bailout of Wall Street, and then to the corporate welfare and corporate crime waves that have resulted in millions losing pensions, savings, and jobs, and squandered tax dollars, a major public works jobs program to repair America's schools, clinics, public transit, bridges, drinking water, and sewage treatment system.
And apparently for the out-of-work U.S. auto industry, too, if necessary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he is in great sympathy with what we are going through here in Michigan with our economy that has been really in a major recession ever since George Bush took office.
Yeah, I have to say the most sympathetic, and we're not, folks, we're not telling you to vote for him. I know it may seem like something close to that here. Don't do the cards and letters of the email, because you have to admit you have not probably heard in detail either the Green Party, which we featured earlier, or the Nader campaign positions. And certainly they were denied access in what I personally, and again, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, but I personally feel were illegal, just as Ralph has pointed out. And what Susan did was simply go down the points that was in the press release, is what Ralph's speech was all about today. So we're not doing anything more than just trying to capture the moment that we promised you, but we did have some technical problems with those smartphones during the first recording.
So those phones really aren't that smart.
And the people that, you know, there was a lot of young people from U of MD, and I'm glad to see they turned out for the event this afternoon. I guess maybe about 200, 300 people. That was almost capacity in the room, but it was nice to see the younger people there. I don't know if they were aware of the almost 50 years of public service that Ralph Nader has done and how significant he's been in consumer protection lawsuits, and of course in suggesting better laws, and never really necessarily a Democrat or Republican, but just things that were clearly better for all the people of the United States. And they mentioned Time magazine, but I thought it was Atlantic, maybe both of them, that in one way or the other in the last couple of years, it said, I believe Atlantic was quoted as saying that Ralph Nader was one of the 100 most important people in American history. And that is the history of the United States, you know, since we became the United States, 1776, that's the spirit. Or 1791, when the Constitution was adopted, whatever date you want in there. So, and Time magazine said he was one of the most significant, most important people of the 20th century. Certainly he you know, his long, long career. I don't think anybody can doubt his knowledge and his activism in a very positive way for the good of everyone. I mean, I don't think Ralph ever was picking sides against the people that were really hurting the public in general. So that's the background. So we covered a famous person. It's true he's on the ballot here, and he is hope you get a chance to see him on television or whatever, one of those very inspiring speakers, and a lot of people may feel that about other candidates too. I've met other candidates in person. I've not met John McCain or Barack Obama, but some people in person have this sort of charisma. I have to say, and it's two totally different kinds of people, but I have met Bill Clinton several times when he was running for president, and after he ran for president, shook his hand just like I.
Well, he's a rock star.
Yeah, but William Jefferson Clinton, our former president, does have this personal magnetism that is absolutely amazing, and of course that helps you in small discussions, public presentations, live, and I don't think all of it comes across on television for President Clinton, but he did get out of a lot of tough fixes, and that's because of his personal charisma, whatever you think of his ideas. I'm just saying Ralph Nader, by the wealth and breadth of his information and sanity and sober sanity, and you know, one nice thing, I've never heard any negative campaigning from him. He didn't. You know, he doesn't think that John McCain should be president. He doesn't think that Barack Obama should be president. But he didn't do the mudslinging against them that we see all over television. That he's not into that. And he doesn't have to be, right? It's refreshing to me because I just want to find out what these people believe and what they say they're going to do.
Well, Ralph Nader is an intellectual giant. That is true. And also Bill Clinton is too. And when he was at the Democratic campaign this year, he brought the House down, so he was out of sight. But one of the issues that Nader brought up today was that the media is not giving the third-party candidates a fair shake. They're not getting their fair share. They're not getting into the debates. They're not getting on national television. And speak to that issue, if you would, Jay.
Well, as Ralph said, it's a sort of an effect that takes place backwards from the debate issue. The debates that we see on television are set up and organized by a committee that was voted into place by the U.S. Congress. And who's in the U.S. Congress?
The Democrats and
Republicans.
Democrats
and Republicans. And they have a board, a panel of 10 or a dozen people, equally Democrat and Republican. Okay, so they know who appointed them, who make the decisions on who gets into the debates and how many there will be. And basically, why, if you had all that power, would you let other people who were equally on the ballot for one race or another have a chance to speak? Television will make someone popular. Ross Perot, when he spent his tens of millions of dollars, was it in year 2000 or before, 96 maybe, or 92 maybe, I don't know how far back it was, but he got into the debates because of all the money he spent in order to get people's attention and to be higher in the so-called public polls. And so they actually, it would be very difficult to deny him. I think there was another candidate, third-party candidate, by the name of John Anderson in the early 90s, who was an independent, formerly I think a Republican, but he ran on many ballots across the U.S. too as an independent. And he got into the debates. But basically, the rules in the states for getting on the ballot in the state and the rules for being part of this are all controlled by the two parties in power. And by golly, well, if you were in power too, self-interest would kick in, and you're not going to let other people easily play in your ballpark.
Well, so the bottom line is,
they weren't going to be in the big debates, just working backwards, there was no reason to cover Nader during the primaries, he said. And I think that's probably true, because since he's got no money to speak of, because he doesn't have any corporate interest, they're going to pay him money. up front. He'll never be in the debates because it's controlled by the Dems Republicans, which means they're not going to cover him even in the 12 to 18 months before that. And because they feel that the people watching maybe won't be as interested because they don't recognize him offhand, and they'll lose money on advertising. And that's the problem with the commercial media. They go for the ratings. They go for the simplicity of every issue. And they don't give a fair and equal shake to all the candidates. You know, in Canada, they just had an election for prime minister, which is kind of forced upon them in the last minute, but that's how they do elections. Stephen Harper, I think that was his name, got reelected, a conservative. But the CBC said, wait a minute, there's a fourth candidate that's on all the ballots from the Green Party of Canada. And so for the first time, they had a complete equal platform and forum. And they don't run with just two parties. They've always had at least three parties involved, and now they have four parties involved, and they're all getting equal amount of time to make their case. And it's not a matter of how much corporate sponsorship they have. And
Nader brought that up today.
Yes.
He mentioned that point about Europe, that Europe has more free elections than we do here and more democracy, and that's why their social programs have encompassed the whole society. They have universal health care. They have all kinds of social programs for people that we are trying to get in this country, and we have not been able to achieve under our democracy, so-called democracy and capitalism. But the bottom line is, in truth, in reality, we don't have free elections and we don't have a full democracy.
No.
Because everyone is not being heard in terms of the candidates.
Well, and over there, for whatever reasons, and I've talked about some of them on the show, the fact that they have most of their elections on a weekend, either a Saturday or a Sunday, when maybe more people are not at work and available to go vote, or making it a national holiday in order to vote. But when more people vote in a democracy or representative democracy, the people that get elected are more concerned about doing things good for all the people. And over here, they say, well, we're expecting maybe 65-70% of the registered adults in the U.S. to vote this time. And only once every 4 years is it ever that high. Well, but how many are not registered? Okay. Even if 70% vote, and Barack Obama, let's say, gets more than half of that 70%, just saying, okay, he will have been elected by just one-third of the people, of the adults in the U.S. So he doesn't really have to do anything that's good for everybody because they don't vote. And they won't vote him out then because they don't vote. They won't vote anybody in, but they won't vote anybody out. So as long as we have such, talk about a silent majority, as long as we have people not participating in the system, then the elected officials, they figure they can do whatever they want because the few people that do vote happen to vote for them, but they're only a small fraction. We can't really call ourselves a democracy until we get everybody educated and much, much, many, many more voting.
And we should be giving full voice to third and fourth party candidates.
Well, they're all called third parties, but all the minority parties, so-called minority parties, all the parties there are for every candidate, whether he's an independent or in a party, other than the Dems and Republicans, should have equal chance to make their presentation. I have to chastise, although I love the Press and Guide and the Times Herald because they exist. This time they did almost no coverage whatsoever, just like the big-time mainstream commercial media, of the other candidates that are on the ballot for all these races. Okay? At one point in the past, I remember they used to send around questionnaires to all the official candidates. And, of course, sometimes a third-party candidate or an independent, they wouldn't get around to, or what, they weren't very serious. They just wanted their name on the ballot, and they didn't send back a response. But there's no evidence that they even tried that. In other words, it looks like that the Press and Guide and the Times Herald committed the same, I call it a sin against democracy, of forgetting that there's any other points of view than the two main parties, just for the sake of, I don't know, ratings, or people don't want to read about those little candidates, you know, that's absolutely the wrong idea in a democracy. There's so many good ideas out there, and mostly now in a time of crisis, some of those might really be the thing. They might really answer the question.
Absolutely. We need other solutions, that's for sure. And we don't need campaign paybacks by big corporations controlling our lives and our future.
Well, that's again, that's your opinion. But let me go over briefly for November 4th essentials. Again, anyone who registered to vote in Michigan by October 6th may participate. If you moved within the same city or township and didn't change your address by October 6th, may still vote at your former precinct. Okay. And so may those who moved to a different city or township after September 5th but didn't register in the new place of residence. So wherever you're registered in Michigan, go back to that same precinct, and you'll still be there as long as you didn't change your address already. Okay, polls are open from 7 a.m. all the way to 8 p.m., and if you're a qualified voter and you're in line at 8 p.m., you'll still be allowed to vote even if it's after 8 p.m. Of course, they do suggest here maybe you want to visit at off-peak time. What is off-peak time? Again, usually first thing in the morning or after work gets out in the afternoon, there's more people there, and so that's an issue. Well, we're coming to the end of our time. You can still do absentee balloting, by the way, folks, Saturday till 2 p.m. at your city clerk's office, and you can also do it on Monday if you just go in directly, fill out the ballot right there. You can vote there. If you can't get there Tuesday, you can do it at your city clerk or township clerk's office either on Saturday tomorrow by 2 p.m. or Monday until 4 p.m. So get out the vote. Make your choices. Be part of the solution, not the problem. Thank you, Susan Morrell. Coming up next is, yes, a scary show. Is that right? Is it going to be scary, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. Tom is coming up right now. This is WHFR. Dearborn, thank you so much for listening to the special edition of the new WHFR Journal. Keep all the ideas going through your head and make the best choices. And you know, God bless us all, I guess.
Thank you, Jay, and thank you to Ralph Nader for appearing on our show.
And earlier in the first hour, Rosa Clemente and Ryan Mehta. Thanks so much. Tell your friends about these shows if you think they've been helpful. And go to our website, www.whfr.fm, and click on the Journal button, and you can listen to either one or both of the hours today all over again.
Don't forget to vote, and happy Halloween and trick or treat.
Let's keep stirring those things up.
Space is the place, space is the place.